Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, you're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about what's happening in the world today. We talk about emerging technologies and emerging possibilities. We talk about where things are going, and we talk about the future, and we're not afraid to take a fairly unusual view of the future. We believe that there's a pretty good case to be made that the world might just be getting better all the time. We believe that if you're not excited about the future, you're probably not paying attention. And we believe that something is going to happen. Something wonderful. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you, man?
I am super fantastic. As I was mentioning before the show started, I'm a little jittery. We've got 2 weeks of my not being on the program due to the fact that I'm about to become a father once again. A little bit later.
Congratulations, Phil.
Thank you. And
I know y'all are excited.
We're very excited. Very much kind of in the mode where you keep looking around, going, "Well, what else did we not think to do? You know, what else?" And in some ways, of course, it's a very simple thing. You know, a baby requires that it be fed. Nature actually takes care of that. That you keep the baby warm. That you keep the baby safe. And yet, in our kind of modern technological world, we've managed to make it very complex and a little bit nerve-wracking. But yeah, we're extremely excited and looking forward.
I suspect it's always been nerve-wracking. I don't think technology made parenthood nerve-wracking. I think it probably was nerve-wracking way back when. So,
You know, there's no question that it's always been a big deal, and no doubt potential fathers have always been nervous, and fathers to be, I should say. I guess it's made it more complicated.
Yeah.
That's probably the, but you know,
yeah,
I'm not
that's fair.
A Luddite. It's made it a lot better too. There's no question. Medical.
Oh yeah.
Has improved our lives in ways we can hardly even imagine. So how are you doing?
Man, I'm great. Had a good weekend. It's absolutely beautiful here in Louisiana. Has been all weekend long, and I spent enough time outside that I've got my first sunburn for the year. It was great. Our church had a kind of a Easter egg hunt yesterday early. So knowing that a lot of people are going to be gone for spring break this coming week. So, you know, we were out there with the kids for a couple of hours in the middle of the day yesterday, and I think everybody out there got burned. but, I mean, just beautiful and fun. And so, it was, yeah, I had a great weekend. Went and saw Knowing on Friday night. Have you seen that movie?
Knowing, not seen it yet. What'd you think?
B+. B+. This is a Nicolas Cage movie. You can tell from the preview that it's some mystery involving these numbers that he uncovers and it has to do with disasters and everything. And I don't want to give too much away, but it's an interesting resolution to this movie. It's kind of out there, but I enjoyed it, and I would recommend it. And yeah, I wouldn't give it an A, but it was certainly worth the money I put down to go see it. So,
did you ever see the movie Pi? It was kind of an independent film. I don't know, probably 6, 7
You mentioned it once before, and I meant to see it because you mentioned it once.
Well, I think at least this much of the premise is the same, that there's some mathematical formula that will give you the future. Is that what's happening in the Nicolas Cage movie, or is there something supernatural going on?
Well, I don't want to say, because that's too big of a spoiler to say
that.
Okay. And, you know, because that's the big question the entire movie.
Oh, okay. Because in Pi, it's definitely, there's a mathematical formula that will give you the future. And that's an intriguing idea. It kind of goes around to the blog post that I wrote on Friday about time travel, because in the movie Pi, not to give away too much, but you all had plenty of opportunity to see that.
Yeah.
People understand that this guy can predict the future, and obviously there are huge financial ramifications. If you run a hedge fund, this is the guy you want working for you, right? I mean, his formula doesn't predict stock prices; it predicts the future. So you're really going to get the correct answer in this attempt to exploit that kind of capability economically is just a really interesting premise. Although I'm guessing that probably this movie, based on the trailer, goes in a pretty different direction.
Yeah, I guess, and I need to tell people, if you're at all squeamish about seeing very, very realistic disasters staged for the screen, knowing as you're watching and that it's all make-believe, it's pretty brutal. And, if you're at all squeamish about that, or if, you're taking a spouse with you that is, or someone else like that, keep that in mind. And you might want to skip it if that's the case. But it's interesting and a pretty cool mystery involved and a very interesting resolution to the movie. So yeah.
Okay, well, you've got our attention with that. Well, we should also bring out our chat host Michael Darling, who is with us as well. Hey, Michael, how's the weather in Colorado?
It's snowing tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, I wondered if up in Centennial you were getting the same thing.
When Stephen said it's beautiful in Louisiana, I typed in the chat, define beauty, because I'm thinking the snow looks pretty dang good.
Oh, yeah.
It is beautiful. It was really beautiful the first snowstorm we had about a week and a half ago, and then that second one was really nice, and then the third one. But I'm thinking it snowed four times anyway in the last week and a half. Am I?
That's the correct statement.
Yeah, so April is making up for that all that warm weather we had in February and March. Now here in Colorado, we're getting kind of a late winter. I don't know if this would be climate change or not. We're not going to have regular seasons anymore. We're going to have
it's weather change for sure.
Well, yeah, it's probably more weather change than climate change.
I heard something about we're in a solar minimum.
I don't get me started on that one. My wife's got me convinced that nothing's going to work for the rest of the year because of that.
Well, usually a solar maximum will mess up things like electronics. A solar minimum, your electronics ought to be doing great.
Yeah, this is the ideal time to have electronics.
Good. Then perhaps she's got it exactly backwards. It's not like it's never happened before. And by the way, the chat has concurred that the movie Pi is one of our favorites. And you referencing Pi as a way to perhaps compare to Knowing has me putting Knowing on the short list, when previously I was like, I don't think so.
Well, I think for those of us who are interested in the future, any movie about this is just it's one to consider anyhow.
Yeah, yeah.
So tonight's program is going to be this kind of hails back a little bit, Stephen. This kind of takes us back to the original Fast Forward Radio. When we first started doing it back in the day, we would just say, hey, I've got a few topics, you've got a few topics, let's do a show.
Yeah, throw them together and see how it mixes. And I kind of like that.
Well, I do too. It's kind of fun. And also, I don't have to come up with a whole theme. I just come up with a few ideas, you come up with a few. And Michael, we're going to start because you came up with a whole 2-to-1 segment for us this evening.
I did, and I can apologize to you guys later, but I'll apologize to everybody else now that I've got a bunch of these. I don't know why. I think it's because I was in the zone of grading papers and writing exams and grading exams over what for me was spring break last week, and we got back to class this week, and I said, oh, I got all this sort of writing mojo going. I'm just going to keep going. So are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let me remind everybody that's listening now or later in recording land that the way 2-to-1 works, or the way it's supposed to work, is we have three facts or three news stories, two of which will be true and one of which will be false. And it's possible that two would be false and one would be true, but I will tell you tonight that two are true and one is false. And I will reference once upon a time I did all three and all three were false, or all three were true, or I did it I totally screwed it up, and I promised I would never do that again, and I'm not. And I'm prefacing these three with that because, you know, I think this one's hard. So here we go. Number one, robot designs and executes its own experiment. A laboratory robot formed a hypothesis on the genetics of baker's yeast and carried out experiments to test its own predictions without intervention from its makers. The result was a series of simple but useful discoveries confirmed by human scientists about the gene coding for yeast enzymes. An improved follow-on to the original robot has already been constructed, will partner with the original for more advanced research. So number one is robot can do its own experiment. Design and execute its own experiment.
Cool. Okay.
Whoa.
Number two, U.S. defense contractor demonstrates prototype, quote, multidimensional, multi-environmental, highly mobile exoskeleton, end quote. Since 2007, when Raytheon Company acquired Sarcos Incorporated, the leading robotic and exoskeleton R&D company, Raytheon has been focused on completing development of the Sarcos device and modifying it to make it more mobile when worn by soldiers. Making the device mobile has been difficult due to weight and power limitations. The Sarcos suit weighs over 60 kilograms, approximately 150 pounds, and was generally only mobile when wired to a power source, greatly limiting mobility. Designs where the suit included a motor and fuel to run it never really succeeded due to the added weight and complexity. Late last year, Raytheon acknowledged rumors of a previously private attempt to integrate the suit into an already mobile device. Quote, think of the Segway, said a Raytheon spokesman at a demonstration of the company's Utah facility just last week. It's not exactly automated in function, but it's close enough that it begins to feel like it when riders get used to it. The Segway PT, manufactured by Segway Inc. of New Hampshire, was created by inventor D. Cameron in 2001 and was inspired by a desire to allow the disabled to have increased mobility. Quote, our design mimics the Segway in that it attempts to maximize mobility in a way that requires virtually no conscious focus from the human operator. Recent breakthroughs in battery and lightweight solar films and other energy sources have made it possible to give the suit much greater mobility in all dimensions. Raytheon claims the device has been tested successfully underwater. The recent demonstration showed off the suit traveling almost 2 kilometers, 1.2 miles, moving over paved and other natural ground surfaces, and elevating briefly to get over rocks and other large obstacles in the way. So number one is robot designs and executes its own experiment. Number two, I'm going to say it's the prototype Iron Man suit.
You know what it sounds like? It's the full combat Segway. Is that right? I mean, it's
You could think of that way, too.
This is the best military idea since Stripes when they came up with that SUV that was...
that was better, but your logic is sound.
We're arming Segways here. Okay, yeah, I know.
Number three.
Takes you in the direction of the Iron Man suit, for sure.
That's right. Number three, the Honda Asimo, or Asimo, goes wireless. A human wearing a Honda helmet managed to control Honda's Asimo robot without moving a muscle. The helmet allows the wearer to control the robot by thought alone. The design team hopes that one day the mind control technology will allow people to do things like turn on air conditioning or open doors without putting down things they are carrying. The helmet is the first brain-machine interface to combine two different techniques for picking up activity in the brain. Sensors in the helmet detect electrical signals through the scalp, similar to a standard EEG, and the scientists combined this with another technique called near-infrared spectroscopy, which can be used to monitor changes in blood flow in the brain, similar to an active MRI. Brain activity picked up by the helmet is sent to a computer, which uses software to work out the movement the person is thinking about. Then it sends a signal to the robot, commanding it to perform the move. So there's your three. You got the robot doing its own experiment, designing and executing it. You got the prototype Iron Man suit or the militarized Segway, and you have the Honda Asimo robot, which we all know exists. That's not fake. Not only going wireless, but going controllerless. Now you can just control it with your mind.
Okay. Wow. Well, these are intense. I see a nice thread running through the three. So well done on bringing three kind of related stories together. And if anything is the Iron Man suit, it's got to be that third one, right? If you can control an Asimo robot with your brain, all you got to do is put yourself inside it, and you're ready to go, I think.
Awesome.
That's my thought. Okay, well, Stephen, you want to take first crack at this? Analyze the three for us?
Okay.
The chat room, they're already giving away the answer.
Yeah, they are. We have smart listeners. And so I'm going to try my best not to look at that. I've actually read, though, the two that I believe are true, and I've not read the one I thought was false. So I'm going to base it on that. Number one, I believe is true. Robot comes up with a hypothesis, tests it, and makes a discovery with baker's yeast. I read about it, and that robot is named Adam, and he's about to get a companion robot that's going to help him called Eve. And if this doesn't kind of give you a low moment, I don't know what will. Machines coming up with a hypothesis, testing it, making a discovery. I think that's a signpost or something. I don't know. It's an important moment.
Absolutely.
It's like the fish stepping, flopping out on dry land or something, but it's a big deal.
And looking foot-like. I think you're right, yes.
Yeah. Number two, I never read about. But, of course, I'm a big believer in these Iron Man suits. I believe that it will happen, and it will be important. But I never read that particular story. So I read about the Honda Asimo robot being controlled by this, looks like a colander on top of this guy's head is what I remember in the story. So I'm going to go with true for number three and true for number one. So number two would be false.
So you're picking number two as the false one. All right.
Well,
I give the definitive answers on this, let me just say you're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're working through our 2-to-1 segment, figuring out which of three plausible-sounding news stories, which one is not true. And, Stephen, you've just told us that your sense is that number two is the made-up story.
Yes.
Okay. I also read about the robot designs, the robot that designs and executes its own experiment. It would be cool since the second one, the helper is going to be called Eve. Wouldn't it have been cool if the first one had been named Wally?
Yeah, I would like that even better.
Just throwing that out there. Now, number two is just too detailed not to be true. I don't mean to denigrate Michael's capability to make stuff up, but, I mean, he's a genius if he made all that up. So, of course, he is a genius, but he's more of a genius than we even realized if he made all that up. The Asimo going wireless, I think, is true, but I think he has gilded the lily. That's what I think is going on here. I think that one probably didn't go quite as far as what is described here. So I'm going to say one and two are true. Three is a falsehood built on a true story. That's my guess.
Well, we want to hear from the chat room probably before Michael lets us know. So, Mike, what's going on in the chat room?
Well, Sally has concluded that she read one and three or something that sounded like one and three, and those must be the true ones, and therefore two must be false because she didn't hear anything about it. I concluded that, we all read too much of the same science press for this to work, but nobody else has commented yet, although I'm happy to withhold confirmation and explanation, or, I'm happy to blurt it out.
Any final guesses from the chat room? Anyone?
I say blurt it out.
And so I'm going for the blurt it out here. And I'm gonna explain, but I am gonna blurt it out that number two is in fact made up. The story I got for the Honda robot comes directly from the Tokyo Press in English, which was summarized in the Financial Times, and I added nothing to it. In fact, I took a lot of stuff out from the story just to boil it down, so I had three that were roughly the same length. And I, as I said in the chat, I prefer to think of the colander helmet that the guy was wearing as a tinfoil hat. But that said, the story is that, this was with some minor lag that with at least one operator in the experiment. If you go to the Honda website and read through the developer's experiment, they had several subjects that were doing this. One of them, the more he did it, the shorter the lag got. So he would think about lifting the arm, and it would take a three-quarters of a second to a second and a half. But after several times doing it, it got faster. Whether he was learning or the helmet was learning, we don't know. But there is some noticeable lag, but the thing is working, and it's working on thought alone. That was number three. It's true. Number one, we heard about the robots. You guys all read the same press I did. Yeah, Wally and Eve would have been cool too. Although when Adam and Eve become the next phase, in fact, there'll be one robot. They won't be two distinct entities working on their own experiment. Eve has been built to be integrated with Adam in a way that they'll be Cain. They'll just be one thing after that. So maybe the Wally-Eve comparison would have failed at that point, but that one's true. The second one, here's my explanation. The second one is false, as far as I can tell. I searched through everything I could find about Sarcos, which is a true company, and their exoskeleton, which is real, and Raytheon's work in this area, which is all legitimate. I could find nothing that said they're that far yet. But you ever see a movie where the good guys are got the bad guy on the phone, and they're gesturing wildly to each other in the background about, you drag out the phone call because we have to trace this call, and we all know that Star 69 doesn't work in movie land. Right? It takes
right.
2 minutes to trace it. 10 minutes to trace a call. 2 minutes. You got to, it's baloney. They trace the call instantaneously. You know it, and I know it too. But for the sake of the movie, the plot would fail if you couldn't, if the bad guy couldn't occasionally call the good guy and have his whereabouts still remain unknown. That said, I look at Segway, and I look at what Sarcos is doing and what Raytheon is focused on trying to do with the technology that they acquired when they bought Sarcos 2 years ago. And I say, this makes perfect sense. You could do it in space because the tether to the space station wouldn't be a big deal. And frankly, you wouldn't need that much power. I'm not sure you'd have to be tethered for power. Of course, you'd have to be tethered so you don't, pull the Dave and just float off into space. And then underwater, likewise, I think, hey, the weightlessness factor of being underwater and being able to be like a scuba diver and use buoyancy to float the thing around, no big deal. The issue becomes, how do you do that on land, and how do you power the thing so it can move across land and jump over rocks and whatever? I got to believe it's there, but in no open source is anything like that or anywhere even close to that referenced, although, frankly, I think
okay, so,
it should.
So you just made this story up from whole cloth. You,
well, from
everything, you just made it up.
Yes, and I tried to format it so that it sounded like exactly the same kind of, press speak, marketing talk that, we see in the other two.
Yeah, absolutely. I was, you fooled me. So I think.
Well done.
And so we're clear, there's no embellishment. I didn't embellish anything other than there is an exoskeleton, there is such a thing as a Segway, and that's it. I didn't embellish anything to get there.
Hey, well, Stephen, you nailed it. Chatters, looks like you guys all nailed it too, and Phil got stumped this time. So.
And in 10 seconds or less, let me just point out that if we as a group, both here on the call and in the chat, had not read the same science press, I defy most people to distinguish between those three in any useful way.
That would sound
equally plausible or equally ridiculous to everybody. And I did some test marketing this afternoon with my wife and with a couple other friends and concluded that, yeah, they're all over the map. It's impossible to tell.
No, I'll tell you what. I think if I hadn't heard it, number one would have jumped out to me as so significant that I wouldn't have believed it. Per Stephen's comments earlier. Three's big, too, but had I not heard one before, I think I would have spotted that as, oh, that's got to be fake, right? You got to be kidding me. A robot that's doing its own research here.
Well, now that a robot's done it, it's no big deal.
Well, that's right.
That's what we do whenever we have a robot system that uses an AI system that beats the world chess master at chess. Well, then it's just no big deal. Chess is not that interesting to us anymore.
Exactly. But. Same kind of thing. Now they're doing science.
Science.
Yeah, big deal. Okay, so what's next on our lineup of topics this evening? Stephen, you got something you want to bring out?
Well, one thing I was impressed to read about this week is these researchers in Horseheads, New York. Lovely town, Horsehead, New York. I wonder, did they, they watch Godfather 2 and then name the town? I don't know. but anyway, these researchers have come up with what they're calling the first economical process for making biodiesel from algae. And apparently, it's like a 40% more efficient process. They're using a solid catalyst instead of a liquid catalyst, and they just flow this stuff over the flow the algae water mix over the solid catalyst, and it separates the stuff that eventually becomes biodiesel. It separates out, and they can and it's a continuous flow thing. You don't have to stop the process and then let it wait and then do it again. You're sending it through constantly. You don't have any wastewater involved. It's a closed loop. Just all kinds of good things about this thing. And now the question is, can it be scaled up?
Do we have numbers when they say economical? What's it going to cost?
They're talking like in the next 5 years, they're talking. Being able to produce biodiesel for less than $1 a gallon, and
wow.
If that's true, then they can compete very, very well against our other sources of diesel that are much higher than that. So,
that's cool. It's too bad it's 5 years out. I guess is the downside. But are they talking full scale commercial production in 5 years?
Yeah, that's what they're talking about. They're talking they're working to get a facility up and running here in the next year or so that's going to be a pilot facility and then be up for full-scale production within 5 years. So that to me is pretty cool.
That is very cool.
And the thing I love about algae is that, there's no it's carbon neutral, in order for algae to be able to work to produce diesel, it has to absorb carbon. And so when you are letting the carbon when you burn it in your tank and you're letting all this carbon come out of your exhaust pipe, that's carbon that was taken to make the biodiesel begin with, so it basically is carbon neutral. So if that's a concern, then you don't need to be concerned about that particular fuel.
Absolutely. That's a beautiful thing. And you know what I love is I love sentences that begin, you know what I love about algae?
Yeah. There's just lots to love about algae, isn't there?
You don't hear that every day. So.
Yeah. Well, we're a little bit of a different crowd around here.
We are. We will talk up what we love about algae. And we've got, there's plenty to love about algae. That's what I'm did you see, I did not get a chance to blog it. It's probably going into a Better All the Time here fairly soon. The story about the hydraulic hybrid that one of the car companies is coming out with. This is something I've been talking about for quite some time. I remember reading about this back in the 80s when people were just saying, in the future we might have these hybrid car technologies. And an article in the Atlantic Monthly back, I think it was like the late 80s, early 90s, took us through several different models for how hybrid car technology might work. And he talked through all the electrical ones, but he said the real smart money is on hydraulics hybrids, and especially if you can combine those with electrical hybrids. But the idea of capturing all the braking and then recycling that into the acceleration of the car is just a tremendously beneficial thing to do in terms of making the vehicle more fuel efficient. And the great thing about hydraulics hybrids is that you get a bigger hydraulic boost the bigger the vehicle is. So you're actually getting a lot more benefit using hydraulics in, say, a big pickup truck or an SUV or a vehicle like that than you would from putting it in a much smaller car. I mean, as a percentage and also in real terms, it's a much bigger piece of it. And what's going to be cool is when we start seeing some of these things start to work together, when we see the first hydraulic electric hybrid that's also running algae biodiesel, right? That's when we know we're really starting to head in the right direction.
Yeah, you got a turbo diesel backup engine on a plug-in electric, That's pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's great. I look forward to seeing more on the algae, and I will put something up about the hydraulics hybrid. Well, I'm just going to say this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're halfway through our program talking about various topics related to the future. We have a lively chat going on. If you're listening live, join us in the chat room or leave a comment at blog.speculist.com. Well, I've got a topic I'd like to introduce. And I was thinking through some of our favorite future scenarios the other day. We talk about the singularity, this idea of reaching greater than human intelligence. And we've talked a lot lately about the economic singularity, about the idea of achieving a world where there's no scarcity.
Yeah.
And another favorite is actuarial escape velocity, working towards a world where aging and other diseases are completely in retreat or have been ultimately eliminated. And we talk about the true space age, the rapid expansion of human presence, permanent habitation, et cetera, et cetera. Those are kind of we did a show with PJ a few months ago where we talked about setting the agenda for the future, and I think that those four probably were close to the top of the items that you put on the agenda for the future. Did I miss anything? Is there another big one that should be included?
No, I'm guessing that's about right.
Okay. And chatters, if you have any additional thoughts, keep shooting them out there. We're eager to hear what they are. But I got to thinking about what is it that gets us from where we are now, from point A to any of those point Bs. You know, what is it that helps us? What is it that slows us down? What is it that's going to make those things more likely? What's going to make them less likely? And I came up with a list of four items. Here's my take on the four items.
I love it that it's just four. Sorry.
Well, you know, I don't want to overcomplicate it. I mean, Aubrey de Grey can solve aging with seven steps. Here we go. I'm going to bring out, usher in a complete new era of human history, but four steps. Okay, so here they are. Number one, to get from here to there, to make these things happen, somebody has to do the work. Okay, so if we're going to have greater than human intelligence, we need people actually writing code. We need people actually developing artificial intelligence. If we're going to have an economic singularity, there need to be people working out these new models, developing the fab labs or the other replication technology or just other technologies that are going to make that possible, etc. Somebody actually has to make to be capable to do the work and to have that as their job or to have the time and the facilities at their disposal that they can do the work. So that's one.
Yeah, you know, I think that's an important point because there was a time in AI research where the field just sort of languished for a decade or so.
Right.
I think we've powered past that now, and we've got plenty of people working in that field now. But that was after a period where, you know, a lot of people kind of given up on it.
Exactly. So you got to have people doing the work. It's not going to happen without somebody actually doing the work, and that's probably the most important thing. Unless people are lined up and doing it, I don't see how we get there. But to enable that, to make that possible, is number two, which is that the resources have to be in place that will allow that work to happen. So even if you have people who are interested, enthusiastic, skilled, wanting to pursue. Oh, you know what I left off was probably molecular nanotechnology, atomically precise manufacturing. Should probably have included that one as well. And that one just came to mind because I was thinking you might have people interested in those things, wanting to do work in those things, but if no one's funding research, if the government isn't funding research or if no business is pursuing that as a business model, if the resources aren't in place, then it doesn't matter. Even if you have people to do the work, the basic infrastructure is not going to allow it. So you got to have people to do the work, and then you have to have the resources in place to enable the work to occur. Okay? With me so
okay.
far?
Yeah.
All right. So number three, in order to get the resources in place, I think the word has to get out that these possibilities exist, that resources are needed to do these things. And that's where we come in at The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio. That's the role we've kind of given ourselves, is to get the word out there and to tell people these are plausible futures. These are possible futures. these are developments that we truly can be working towards if we take the steps and if we put resources behind them. So, number three, get the word out. Okay? Somebody has to do the work, got to get the resources in place, get the word out. And then number four is the one I scratched my head, and it's interesting. Well, let me read it first, and then I'll tell you the thought process I went through. Number four is, then we got to get everybody on the same page, and we're going to put a plan in place, and then we make it happen. Yay, team. Rah. And, you know, I looked that over. This was I was writing this as a blog entry a few days ago, and I looked item four over, and I thought, you know what, that number four is not right. There's something wrong with that one. Maybe it's too pat. You know, spreading the word is helping, and creating demand for these things is helping. But I think that this idea of that we're going to get everybody on the same page, we're going to put a plan in place and execute on it, misses something important. And what it misses, I remembered I had read in a book called Mindset by John Nesbitt. Are you familiar with John Nesbitt?
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure I've not read Mindset.
Okay, yeah, he's a Megatrends guy, right? So he's
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Megatrends and that.
Yes,
that
I've read that.
So Mindset is this book he wrote about how we think about the future and what kinds of, well, he calls them mindsets, what basic attitudes and approaches we have to take towards the future. And here's what he says about expectation. Expectation, of course, being one of my favorite things. I always talk about what are the reasonable expectations. And the idea of creating a sense of expectancy within people in order to help bring about the future. Here's what John Nesbitt says. Expectations always travel at higher speeds. A brief look into history reminds us of the timelines of the past. My lifelong experience has been that things we expect to happen always happen more slowly. With inventions, we continually underestimate the time span required from idea to their full realization. The new fields of biotechnology and nanotechnology will be evolving for all the years left in the 21st century. It is the surprises that overwhelm us, such as AIDS and the terrorist attacks of September 11th. As with human species and other manifestations of nature, almost all change is evolutionary, not revolutionary. Things just take time, almost always more time than we expect. So I thought about that. First off, bummer, right? I mean, hey, come on, really? It's going to take all of the 21st century to get us to get us through nanotechnology and biotechnology for those things to really sink in. And I got to thinking about this idea that expectation works against us. And I think there's two reasons why Nesbitt is correct, or there's two ways that he's correct about expectation working against things coming into being. The first is that, and this is almost tautological. This is almost axiomatic. Unexpected developments don't come as fast because we never spent any time anticipating them, right? So naturally, I should say they come faster, right? Because we never spent any time anticipating them. So there was not this long wait for the unexpected thing to happen. But by way of distinction, anything that we've expected, you know, when you're a kid how long does it get to summer vacation, right? Because you're expecting it, you're anticipating it the entire time. But if the teacher comes in and says, hey, we're going to watch a movie today, you know, that's huge, you weren't expecting it. So there's an emotional aspect, I guess is what I'm saying, where we're involved in the things that we expect, and that changes our perception of time, so that time kind of slows down around the things we expect. And, you know, the example I would give on this one is high-definition TV. Now, this is really interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know when high-definition TV was first proposed?
Well, I know that I've been looking forward to high-definition TV since I was in high school. Right. I mean, seriously, that was 87.
Right, absolutely. The basic standard that we have today with the 5:3 aspect ratio and many of the features that we currently have was developed in Japan in the late 60s. Okay, So
yeah.
We never heard of it back in those days, but that's when they actually came up with it. When it first garnered world attention was actually a trip that President Reagan made to Japan, or it could have been the other way around. Anyway, President Reagan got wind of this, and he said, this is big. We need to do something with this. And so starting in the early 80s, there was this buzz around, wow, high-definition television. It'll have a different aspect ratio, and it's going to be much clearer pictures. And you're right. Before long, the FCC said, yes, we're exploring adopting that as a standard. Then finally in the 90s, they said, we've settled on what the standard will be, and you know, here's going to be the timeline. But from the time President Reagan said, hey, this is big, we got to get this, until you finally had a high-def TV in your house, I mean, you know, that's a big chunk of your life that's gone by. So, right? You know, it's you've been anticipating, you've been expecting this technology, and it really did seem to happen slow. Now, contrast that with the iPod.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, one moment, we had no idea what it was, and the next moment we all had them. You know, I mean, there was no lead in at all.
Exactly. Nobody ever told me, or if they did, it didn't register in the same emotional way that I would have a little wallet-sized device that I'd carry around that would have all my music on it. I might have heard something like that, but I wasn't promised it. It was a far future thing. It was not a technology that I had been led to expect. And then suddenly the iPod shows up, and you're right, a couple of years later, we've all got one. Boom. It happens out of the clear blue sky, and we're all carrying one around. And then if you look at, you just put your review up for the iPhone earlier this week.
Yeah. You know what's remarkable is that I bought a Kindle about a month or two ago, a month ago. Right when the Kindle 2 came out, I bought a Kindle 2. And I was thinking to myself, you know, this is cool, but this is book-sized, and I can't fit this in my pocket. Wouldn't it be cool if I could have a pocket-sized Kindle to carry with me, and I could have my entire Kindle library, you know, I could read it on this nice, comfortable, big thing at home, and then have my entire Kindle library in my pocket when I'm out. 1 week later, Amazon announces, We're putting Kindle on the iPhone, and so then I got an iPhone. I mean, I waited. I had to wait for my dream to come true 1 week. You know,
and a month later you had the iPhone, and now you've got the.
I got Kindle on my iPhone to carry in my pocket. I got my book library with me everywhere I go, and I've got the more comfortable to read Kindle here. I keep at the house, so that's pretty cool.
So those time frames are definitely faster. There's no question. I mean, there's a perceptual difference, but also that's just a really rapid time frame. Actually, probably the time between someone first proposed a mobile phone and until you got an iPod with your Kindle on it, that's probably a much longer time than is involved in high-def TV. But the expectation figures in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And the fact that you were expecting one for a long time, really, you know, you went from, wow, that would be neat, to a week later exists, to 3 weeks after that, you have it. That really plays against expectations. So I think there's this psychological, perceptual difference. And then I think that there might be a real difference, too, because we don't want to confuse causation with correlation. You know, I've established that there's a correlation between expecting something and it taking a long time. But does it cause things to take a long time if we expect them? And I think maybe it does. And what I think might be happening is that once we expect something, a certain, if not complacency, just a lack of urgency sets in. So,
well, in the case of AI, it was different. Everybody's expecting in the 60s that, you know, in a few years we're going to have HAL, you know, hopefully not going insane and killing astronauts, but we're going to have artificial intelligence, and it's just going to happen, and we know it's going to happen, and it's just a matter of time. Well, it turned out to be a more difficult problem than anybody had really expected in the 60s, and so basically in the 80s, AI funding dried up, and because I guess in part because this is just too hard, we can't, you know, this is just not doable, we're not getting any payback out of the money we're putting into this field. And it took a while for the field to kind of reboot. And, you know, and when it came back in, it was with much lowered expectations. We're gonna create, you know, intelligent systems that, you know, are good in these limited fields that can, you know, produce these limited results, and don't expect how, you know. And then they built on that. And so the expectations game worked against AI and to such an extent that, you know, everybody's going, well, where's my Hal, you know, in 1980? Where is he? Well, you know, 30 years away. But
anyway. And he remains 30 years away.
Yeah, he remains that far away. So.
Yeah. Exactly. The fact that it was expected, I think, played in the case of AI, in the case of HDTV, a somewhat debilitating effect role in getting to that technology. So I think Nesbitt is right. I think that the things we expect definitely take longer. Not only.
Well, I got to take the counter. I got to go with a counter argument on this, or you know, why are we doing the speculus and fast forward radio? You know, I think there's the opposite argument. Yeah, sometimes expectations can you build them up too high and then they're dashed when the problem turns out to be too hard or harder than expected. But there's also, a failure to dream sometimes. You know, I mean, if you don't have an idea that, you know, something out there that's really cool, like maybe a fab lab or something like that, if you had no idea that that's even possible, then maybe you're not out there pushing for it. And so I think that there's definitely a role to be played in getting the word out. And, expectations can cut both ways, but I think that usually it cuts in our favor.
All right. Well, you're actually jumping way ahead and
wrapping sorry.
Up the argument. No, okay. I'll come back around to it. I think you make a great case. And we're not going to stop what we do, even if expectation was proved to prevent things from happening. I wouldn't stop what we're doing because we like what we're doing, and I don't believe
it comes out of that, does it?
Everyone. And plus, I've already got permission to do this on Sunday nights from my wife, so there. Before I take that a little further, let me just say this is Fast Forward Radio. We're talking about various topics related to the future. Right now we're talking about the power of expectation, the positive power, possibly the negative power of expectation in terms of getting us to the future. We have a lively chat going on in our chat room if you'd like to join us, if you're listening live, or leave us a comment at blog.speculus.com. Here's where I think it really is a problem. And I don't think it becomes an issue of, well, we shouldn't talk about the future then, because people will start to expect it and then it won't happen. I think that would be insane. But I think there might in fact be, once you say we've got this nailed, we expect this certain defined pathway to occur, that you get this complacency. Also, your options become limited at that point, because we've got an expected way that it's going to happen. So maybe what we want to do is we want to take an approach where we eliminate expectation only because we're working on many different variable ways that a certain thing could occur. For example, if you look at we're looking forward to the singularity, but we don't necessarily have certainty as to whether we're going to achieve it with deliberate attempts to get friendly AI, or is it going to be some kind of serendipitous discovery related to narrow AI, like a trading algorithm or a search algorithm that wakes up and suddenly you've got AI, or will human enhancement lead us to greater human intelligence, which then ultimately leads us to the development of the first true AI? If you have those different ideas competing with each other, we don't actually have a positive, absolute defined expectation as to how we'll get there. And so we still have the possibility of being surprised. We're not going to grow complacent, and the different possibilities can compete with each other, and ultimately one maybe supplants the rest by becoming the one that comes in, or maybe more than one. Maybe multiple ideas will multiple different approaches will show up at the same time, and we'll get to the singularity two different ways. And the other example I would give of that is we talk about the economic singularity, there are definitely competing models as to how we'll get there. And I wrote earlier this week that I'm not terribly married to the existing economic models that say it has to go this way or it has to go that way or it has to be this kind of hybrid between the two. I think that some of the commenters didn't actually take me at my word when I said, no, I'd truly like to see what the other options are. I'd really like to explore what other ideas there are for how you might achieve this thing. Because I think if we say, well, we're, you know, to take one potential argument, we're going to keep the economy strong and we're going to keep productivity going and people will build replicators and then everyone will have free stuff, or we're going to become more humane and compassionate, we're going to raise taxes, we're going to send a check to everybody, you know, whatever that model is, once you've decided that's the straight line and that's what we expect to happen, that complacency sets in and the ability of those other possibilities to kick in is diminished to a certain extent. So I actually think, going back to my four-step process, yep, somebody has to do the work, the resources have to be in place, somebody has to get the word out, and then item four is not get everybody on the same page. I think we have to keep everybody off the same page, and we have to get everybody thinking about possibilities.
Yep.
And focused on multiple possibilities, which, once again, that's what we do.
I'm all for that. Trust individuals to, you know, by doing their own thing, to come up with somebody coming up with the right thing, and not putting all your eggs in one basket. I think that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And let there be in the same way that we've observed that these X Prize type competitions, these push prizes, which put multiple teams of people working on a particular goal against each other trying to make something happen, seem to be an effective way to get to a new level of technological development. Entertaining and working towards, even to a certain extent, conflicting or contrary ideas about how we might achieve these objectives becomes a rational thing to do.
Right.
Because we're hedging our bets. We're saying, well, what I know...
Phil, are you there? Okay, it sounds like we've lost Phil, which happens from time to time. So, Phil, if you can, call back in.
It's Canadians. They couldn't get the Kenny, they got the Phil.
Okay. Oh, well. We'll have to get Phil to call back in. Oh, well. I would put Phil's four steps actually in a different order, Michael. I'd say, you know, the order might be something more like step 3, 4, 2, and 1. I think first you got to get the word out, and then, you know, then you have to come up with a plan. Or, in as Phil just stated, you know, maybe we need to come up with many plans, and then you devote the resources to whatever plans sound the most feasible, and then you have people do the work according to whatever plan that they're working on.
Well, the do whichever plan sounds most feasible implies two things. One, that there can be a comparison, and two, that we're capable of making that comparison. And it goes to that, Phil made the comment about maybe the better thing is we all stay off the same page.
Yeah.
Like we encourage people to approach it from different directions, and I'm not sure we're smart enough to do that. I frankly think that's how it'll happen, but I don't think we can. We can't think it out. If we could think it out, we'd already be post-singularity. We'd be smart enough to map it out and go, hey, you know, your path is too close to mine. Your page is too similar. Do something different. Well, we have no idea.
Yeah. Well, think about it this way. If you have multiple corporations, let's say, pursuing a piece of technology, and, you know, they're, for the most part, they're not going to be communicating with one another, so they're going to be trying different things just because, you know, that's the idea that they happen to come up with. So staying off the same page is actually the easy part.
It's the wish we have that, you know, there's two guys in a garage somewhere in every neighborhood doing something. I mean, we don't know it, but we hope it.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see if... No, I'm still seeing no Phil. Okay. All right, well, I'm going to go on to my next story while we're waiting on Phil to call back in. I thought this was pretty interesting. Have you heard, Michael, of the Stirling solar concentrator? Have you ever, I mean, all right, let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of a Stirling heat engine before?
Yes, I have. Functioning as a solar concentrator, no, although conceptually that's kind of cool.
Well, the idea here is that you you have a heat engine that's like, and you got what looks like a satellite dish. It's sort of a mirror that concentrates heat on the Stirling engine, and you use that to produce electricity rather than going with silicon cells. And it's a pretty low-tech way to do it, but they're getting this particular group that's working on it is getting like 24% efficiency out of it, which is comparable to with some of our best solar cells.
Well, the cool thing about this, if it's anything like a Stirling heat engine, just using solar as the heat source, it's actually pretty low tech. There's no cosmic thin film solar panel or some wacky substrate that you got to figure out a way to make carbon nanotubes first. It's actually a mechanical design.
Yeah, this thing is, the Stirling engine has been around, I think, since the 19th century. So I mean, it's proven technology, obviously,
Well, proven up to the point that you could build it. Proven to the point where you could make it productive and worthwhile. Not yet, but if concentrated solar could get you there, I hadn't seen that. That's very interesting.
I have just lost my switchboard, so I'm glad that you can still hear me, Michael. I'm going to try to relaunch the switchboard. Maybe we'll get Phil back when we do it, and maybe the show will crash. I don't know. This can be fun, though. So, at any rate, I am killing the switchboard now.
Okay, everybody, hang on to your hat.
Okay, you still hear me, huh?
I do.
Okay, that's cool.
We could be, talking to ourselves. I don't even know if the chat's still up.
Yeah. Let's see what we got here. Switchboard wise. All right. And still no Phil, though, huh?
He said he'd call back in.
Okay. All right. Phil, are you there? Okay. Well, I'm going to hang up on what I think is Phil's the deadline with Phil and let him try to call back in. Are you still there, Michael? All right, have we got a show going still? Hello, hello. Hello. Anybody hear me? Test. Test.
I can hear you.
Oh, good. Phil, are you there? Phil's
in, he says he called back in. He says he heard the music and everything, but he can't, and he can hear you, but you can't see him on the control panel.
Okay. Oh, well, I guess we can go forward and continue.
Oh, Sally can hear Phil, but Sally, can you hear us? That's funny.
All talking over each other. Oh, this is a nightmare.
Yeah, I'll just shut up.
I wasn't asking you to do that. I kind of like knowing somebody's out there, if you want to know the truth, Michael. I'm going to hang up.
Okay, well, I can fill that role.
All right.
Be present. That I can do.
Okay. I'm going to hang up on the fill line that I'm seeing here that I'm obviously not hearing, and ask Phil if he would once again to call in. Hello? Hello?
Hello, Stephen?
Hey, Phil. There you are.
Ah.
Man,
wow.
That was kind of weird, wasn't it?
That was awfully strange. Well, I'll tell you, I think, of course, we can diagnose this all later, but I actually think Blog Talk Radio booted me for some reason. I think it sometimes it doesn't like this Vonage line because I kept calling back in. I had dial tone, and I would call back in, and I would hear you, but you couldn't see my line there. I could hear you, but you couldn't see me. It was really, really bizarre.
Weird. Well, anyway, how much did you hear? We were talking a little bit about the Stirling engine and how this group, Infinia, is coming up with this idea of using it get electricity out of sunlight, and they're getting efficiencies comparable with the best silicon solar panels. And so maybe there's another example of another method to reach the same results.
Well, absolutely. You know, this is a good example of an unexpected development, right?
Yeah.
We weren't looking for this one, and here it came. So by having that on the table, and that kind of puts me in mind of Brian Wong's piece a couple weeks ago where he just listed all these different things going on. Did you see that? It was just this kind of roundup of technology news.
Yeah, like his version of a better all the time. It was really good. Yeah, I read through
it. Yeah, well, it had probably five times, maybe six or seven times as many items in it as we put in a better all the time. So it was really just a really impressive collection of news stories, pieces of information about all these different ways that we could potentially solve energy problems or get to general AI, or you name it. There were a lot of different pieces on there. But when you look at something like this, different kind of engine, different approaches to energy, I think yeah, you're absolutely seeing the same kind of thing.
Pretty cool. Well, I bet you got another one.
Well, you know, the other one I had this evening was actually our Tales of the Paranormal. How was that?
That was great.
Since we don't have the audio tonight, I'll just Okay, no, that goes with Astounding Science Facts.
Yeah, that's whatever. He loves the whale song. He's going to do the whale song anytime.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so let me read this headline for you. This after getting so cheerful and happy about how all these different possibilities help us to get to a brighter future, I'm sorry to kind of bring everybody down with this one, but I think I need to get the word out, and people need to know. The headline is simply this: Headmaster, no vampires at our school. And I'll read just a couple of the first paragraphs here. You may have seen this story floating around. Boston, the headmaster of one of the city's most prestigious exam schools is dealing with an unusual rumor sweeping student classrooms. There are no vampires at Boston Latin School, says headmaster Lynn Moon, I believe it's Teta. Seriously, students at the school, which was founded in 1635, began emailing news organizations Wednesday night with a strange story of vampires roaming the halls. Supposedly, three students believe that they are vampires, and today, when a student was bitten, the police were informed, wrote one student in a message to the BostonChannel.com. I heard that one girl was arrested and another suspended. Now, and the story goes on to explain how mass hysteria, kids, they tend to be overly imaginative, they get these ideas in their heads, blah, blah, blah. But I think we know what's going on here. Stephen, do you have a pretty good idea what's going on here?
Well, I think this is a case of, maybe some strange kids that look a little different or something, or maybe this is Twilight, this is Twilight mania going a little too far or something like that.
Well, I can see you're in as bad a denial as the people at BostonChannel.com. No, when you see a denial at this level, okay, that can only mean that there is significant vampire activity going on at the school. Okay? And I'm surprised, frankly, Stephen, that after I've taken you through so many tales of the paranormal that you didn't jump right on that. You remember the school in Taiwan that canceled its UFO class?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
See, it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, okay? It must be, yeah. Canceling the UFO class because there's no UFOs, that's the only proof that the men in black have infiltrated the administration at that school. Yes, I understand.
That's right. And what in the world would lead a major school administrator, a leader at this school, to stand up and say there are no vampires at this school? Well, I can tell you what. Significant vampire activity at the school, okay? And
I'm going to have to dig up. There was back in the early 1990s, I'm going to have to dig up this story at some point for Tales of the Paranormal. There was some arrests made in New Orleans. Now, of course, New Orleans is one of the major, locales of the Interview with the Vampire. That series of novels. What's that lady's name? Anne Rice.
I can't think of her name.
Her Lestat novels, and you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And so they even have tours of places that you can that are significant places within her novels. If you go to New Orleans, you can get on one of those vampire tours and stuff. Anyway, there was apparently in the early 90s a group of, whacked out goth kids that were into all kinds of crazy vampire-related rituals. And at some point they crossed the line and apparently bit a few people. Well, obviously,
whoa,
the police were called out, and they broke up this vampire ring. And at any rate, I've got to pull that story up because, as far as I know, that's the only documented case of people thinking they were vampires and then following through and to the point that law enforcement was actually called out. So,
man, that is creepy, huh?
Yeah, pretty creepy. But, if you've spent any time in Jackson Square, after dark, you don't find it hard to believe.
You can kind of buy into it, huh? You can kind of get the vibe a little bit, maybe.
There's some strange things going on anyway, so you just throw that into the mix.
Yeah, well, that's a good example, I guess, of something akin to memetics, isn't it? This idea gets a hold of people, and wow.
These novels get this idea that this is going on. This is an undercurrent in New Orleans, and then all of a sudden, because she said it was, it kind of was for at least a brief moment.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Well, I just recommend to everyone listening, keep some garlic on hand. It's always good for health purposes anyway to have plenty of garlic. It makes food yummy. And be careful who you invite into your house because if you invite a vampire in. You have no ability to defend yourself against the vampire.
This concludes Coast to Coast.
That's the information I like to give on this show. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, George Norrie's got nothing on us, huh?
That's right. Oh, man.
Okay, well, I think that does it for my topics this evening. I know we had a little bit of a delay there in the middle of the show. Do you want to do one more, or should we move on to the music, or how would you like to proceed?
Let's go ahead and wrap it up.
Okay.
It's the same band as last week. This is it's sort of unusual. I went through, a lot of. I often will listen to a lot of music in preparation for the show, and I just happened to the song that I happened to pick out this week. I looked at it once I downloaded it and got it all ready to go. I said, "This band name is familiar," It's last week's band. Fortunately, it's a different song. It's Woodfish is the name of the band, and the song is Thinking of You.
All right. So Woodfish singing Thinking of You, and we'll be thinking of all of you listening. Thanks, Stephen, for putting that together and for your contributions this evening. Thanks to Michael for your help and for everyone listening. Thanks for being part of our program. We look forward to being with you all again very soon on the next Fast Forward Radio. Until then, live to see it.
Follow me.